It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Auto workers on strike. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Nearly 50,000 United Auto Workers walked off the job at midnight, including 3,000 at GM plants in Lockport, Tonawanda, and Rochester, New York.
We have to do what we have to do. This is our lives. This is our livelihood.
The strike could lead to a shortage of GM cars and parts. Union President Terry Devis says this job action is all about wages, health care, and job security.
We are standing up for our members and for the fundamental rights of working class people in this nation.
Western New York State Senator Tim Kennedy.
We would ask that GM Corporation get to the table as quickly as possible, resolve these issues with the workers, put the workers back to work, but pay them a fair wage and give them the benefits that they rightfully deserve.
The UAW balking at GM's latest contract offer, which includes billions in new investments at over 50 GM facilities. NBC's Ann Thompson says there is incentive for GM to resolve this and to resolve it quickly.
The last time the UAW struck, which was in 2007, that strike cost GM $300 million a day.
Both sides of the labor impasse meeting today at the negotiating table in Detroit. President Trump via Twitter urged GM and the UAW to get together and make a deal. Iran denying claims that it was responsible for the largest disruption ever to the world's oil supply. This despite evidence from the Saudis today that Iranian drones were involved in the sabotage. 10 drones in all attacking a huge processing plant in Saudi Arabia. It sent plumes of smoke so high you could see it from space. Correspondent Bill Neely says President Trump's now considering military action.
This was the biggest single hit ever on global oil supply. But the big question this morning is military. What will President Trump do now? As he says, the U.S. is locked and loaded.
It remains to be seen what kind of an impact this will have on U.S. gas prices. Reporter Chris Van Cleve with CBS News.
One fuel price expert tells CBS he expects the jump will be between 10 and 25 cents per gallon. He calls the increase, quote, annoying but not likely to change consumer behavior. Now, how long the spike in gas prices will last, that depends on how fast the Saudis can restore production.
To keep the oil market stable, President Trump has okayed the release of emergency supplies from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It's the first time in 8 years that we have done that. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh facing more unsubstantiated accusations of sexual misconduct. A former Yale classmate says the FBI failed to investigate her claims during Kavanaugh's bitter confirmation battle last year. Author Carrie Seferino wrote a book about the ordeal and thinks these latest accusations are nothing more than gossip and hearsay.
People's reputations are being trashed, are being damaged irreparably based on absolutely uncorroborated information. You can't just run with this.
These new accusations reported over the weekend in the New York Times, despite the fact that the accuser declined to be interviewed by the FBI and failed to even remember the alleged incident. Those facts were omitted in the Times report, and Lily Valletta with the Heritage Foundation thinks it's because Kavanaugh's a conservative.
This is why we're seeing an erosion of true journalism. We cannot put politics over people. And what makes me really disappointed about this is the 1 in 6 women in America that are true victims of sexual assault that now may be questioned because of politics.
President Trump says Kavanaugh should start suing people and the U.S. Justice Department should come to his rescue. The company that makes the painkiller blamed for a nationwide opioid epidemic has now filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Purdue Pharma hopes the move will settle some 2,600 lawsuits. Healthcare attorney Harry Nelson says it's not likely.
The state of New York, for example, which has been a leader, claims the Sackler family is worth some $13 billion independent of the company, and that billions have been transferred in recent years out of the United States, and they want to see that money added to the pile.
Legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum says the bankruptcy filings intended to protect as much of the Sackler family assets as possible.
They might be paying $3 billion towards the settlement, but there is evidence that for 2 decades they transferred billions of dollars dollars from Purdue to shell companies and private offshore accounts, none of which will go to any of the plaintiffs in this case.
Plaintiffs allege overzealous marketing of prescription painkillers by Purdue Pharma is what triggered an epidemic of addiction. Connecticut may become the fifth state in these United States to ban religious exemptions for childhood vaccines. The governor and state health commissioner will have more to say on the controversial decision later today. The number of students claiming religious exemptions in Connecticut rose 25% since last year. A rock and roll Hall of Famer's died. Rock legend Rick Ocasek, lead singer of The Cars, found unresponsive in his Manhattan apartment yesterday. His age, a matter of debate, it ranges from 70 to 75, still no cause of death. Anthony Curtis with Rolling Stone magazine says The Cars had a sound uniquely their own.
There was a kind of almost power pop sound to what they did. It was very, very catchy.
The Cars inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Monday, Cuomo signs another executive order saving farms in the Commonwealth and a major wind farm in the works in Steuben County, New York.
Good afternoon. Although the week started on a cloudy note, it's going to turn out sunny and beautiful. I'll be back with forecast details in 10 minutes.
All right, can't wait for that. Thank you, Kevin. Checking some of the headlines where you live across New York and Pennsylvania. A group of New York lawmakers are gathering in Albany tomorrow to look at ways to expand access to broadband internet in rural and remote parts of the state. New York spent millions enhancing rural internet service. Officials say high-speed internet plays a pivotal role in not just the quality of life for a local community, but also is essential for emergency services and the overall health of the local economy. Last week, Governor Cuomo announced the creation of a new state task force to look into expanding rural broadband. Governor Cuomo has also signed another emergency executive order. This one bans the sale of flavored e-cigarettes throughout New York.
My first responsibility is to protect the people of the state of New York. Everybody knows vaping is dangerous.
Cuomo says vaping is no longer being used to transition adults off of cigarettes. Rather, it's being marketed directly to kids.
68% of the use are flavored products. And the flavored products are highly attractive to young people. Names like bubblegum, cotton candy, Captain Crunch.
The ban on flavored e-cigs in New York takes effect in a couple of weeks. Pennsylvania, for the first time, accepting online applications for absentee ballots. The Wolf administration announcing today that voters can now use the site votespa.com to apply for absentee ballots for the November 5th election. Voters who apply online will receive their ballot in the mail. They must still mail or hand deliver those ballots to county election officials. Applicants need a PennDOT driver's license or valid ID number. The deadline to apply for an absentee ballot is October 29th. The deadline for county election officials to receive those ballots, November 1st. Schools across New York begin the academic year with a new tool aimed at preventing student suicides and violence. And it involves guns. Here's reporter Julie Walker.
About a third of U.S. states have so-called red flag laws, which allow courts to temporarily take guns from people believed to be a danger to themselves or others. But New York is the first to implement legislation empowering schools, in addition to police and relatives, to petition courts. Supporters of red flag laws say the time teachers and other educators spend with students each day makes them uniquely suited to pick up on the kind of troubling behavior seen before recent school shootings. But opponents have raised concerns about due process and argue the laws can be used to take away guns from law-abiding citizens. Julie Walker, New York.
New York State has approved another wind farm project. This one, northern Steuben County, will feature nearly 70 towering turbines in places like Cohocton, Dansville, and Wayland. The 500-foot-tall wind turbines will be spread over private, agricultural, and recreational land. Pennsylvania politicians are looking for ways to prop up the struggling dairy industry. Shannon Powers with the State Agriculture Department.
We need the dairy industry in Pennsylvania. It's part of our heritage, and it's part of our future.
Jacob Klein runs a family farm in central Pennsylvania. He says lower milk prices are really starting to impact his bottom line.
It's been tough to keep going, and and keep the finances where they need to be, but we're fighting through it.
Klein says the biggest challenge facing farmers today is trying to figure out
what we can do to become successful and keep going, and try and see what else we can do to generate revenue so we can continue and have a good family operation.
The state is awarding $5 million to Pennsylvania farmers who are committed to innovation in agriculture. Once again, Shannon Powers at the State Agriculture Department.
We awarded grants to people for things like new products that they're developing on their farms, or new ways to do business that can offset those changes in the marketplace.
Tomorrow, farmers from all across the Commonwealth will be brainstorming new ideas for marketing milk at a Dairy Innovation Summit in Harrisburg. Milk production is still a major part of the Pennsylvania economy, with more than 500,000 cows on 7,000 farms. Chocolate milk might soon be off the menu for New York City schools. The school chancellor considering getting rid of chocolate milk because of worries about sugar content. A group of upstate dairy farmers has sent a letter to the mayor, Bill de Blasio, opposing the proposal. Daycare providers in New York will soon have new guidelines for handling food allergies. We get that story from Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
The State Health Department is crafting the new guidelines with input from pediatric experts. They include new training requirements for daycare workers on what to do when a child experiences an allergic reaction. Elijah's Law is named after a 3-year-old boy who died in daycare after suffering an allergic reaction to a grilled cheese sandwich. He was given the sandwich despite having a known allergy to dairy products. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Penn State President Eric Barron is getting a 2.5% pay hike. When you factor in his retention bonus, that will bring his yearly salary to more than $1 million. Barron's been Penn State's top administrator since 2014. It is now 12 past the hour. The Bills on a roll. The 2-minute drill, yours next in sports with Sonny Delphia.
Yeah, Josh Allen ran for a touchdown pass for another. The Bills beat the Giants 28-14 to start the season with two wins at the Meadowlands. Reporter asked, hey, you could have been drafted by a New York team. He said,
I'm in New York.
Yeah, I am in New York. And?
One New York team.
Just one New York team. The Giants and Jets both play in New Jersey, for what it's worth. Eli Manning on the Giants starting 0-2 for the sixth time since 2013.
Obviously, it's not how you want to start. We just keep fighting and find ways to play better football. It's as simple as it comes down to it.
Tough start in Pittsburgh. Steelers also falling to 0-2 on the year after losing to the Seahawks 28-26 and losing Ben Roethlisberger and James Conner in the game to injuries. Head coach Mike Tomlin.
But that wasn't the reason why we didn't win this game. We were fully capable with the guys that were on the field. We didn't make enough plays, to be quite honest with you.
The Steelers will find out today if Ben Roethlisberger will need surgery. The Saints found out that Drew Brees is done for 6 weeks after injuring his thumb in a 27-9 loss to the Rams. Last night, Battle of the Birds. Falcons knock off the Eagles 24-20. Exciting game. Doug Peterson still impressed.
Love the way these guys fought. The competing, these guys battled right to the end. You know, it was in our hands at the end to win the game, and we came up short. It stings, obviously, losses like this, and it's going to make us better moving forward.
And two teams looking to avoid 0-2 starts meet tonight as the Jets host the Browns in Monday Night Football in the Meadowlands. Major League Baseball, Dodgers rally by the Mets 3-2 in New York. The Mets are 4 out of the National League wild card. The Phillies have fallen 4.5 out of the wild card after falling to the Red Sox 6-3. Not worried about the wild card. The Yankees, they fall to the Blue Jays 6-4, but the Yanks' magic number to clinch the American League East is just 3. In Cleveland, the Indians beat the Twins 7-5 to avoid a 3-game sweep. The Indians trailed the Twins by 4.5 in the American League Central, 1.5 out of the American League wild card. And the Cubs destroy the Pirates 16-6 for Family Life. I'm Sonny Delphia.
All right, Sonny, thank you very much. And this just into the Family Life newsroom. Big Ben Roethlisberger, who we mentioned was injured in that game against Seattle, out for the season. Bad news for the Steelers. And still to come on the Noon Report, GM strike underway. The question is, how long will it last? We will have an update. Trump says we are locked and loaded in regards to Iran. What does that mean? And where have all the students gone? We're taking a closer look at declining enrollment in public schools.
Older generations like to hammer millennials for being narcissistic, for fearing commitment, for their sense of entitlement. But what if the real problem with millennials is who raised them? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The infamous millennials are the generational cohort born between 1980 and 1997, and they might be the most overanalyzed demographic group in American history. Unlike previous holders of that title, the baby boomers, most of the analysis of millennials has been negative and have included words like privileged, narcissistic, entitled, spoiled. That's quite a cynical conclusion about more than 80 million people. Well, here's my controversial claim for today. Much of what we think is wrong with the younger generation, especially millennials, can be attributed to the baby boomer and Generation X culture they were raised in, including their parents and other primary influences. Now, in full disclosure, I'm a Gen Xer. Once upon a time, we were what's wrong with the world. And honestly, I think we kind of were. Now the blame is leveled at millennials, including a recent article in New York Magazine headlined, "Millennials Aren't That Into God, Patriotism, or Having Kids." The article reported on a recent NBC Wall Street Journal poll that compared the attitudes of millennials with those of people 55 years old and over. The results are kind of stunning. While 79% of those 55 and over say patriotism is very important to them, only 42% of younger Americans say that. While 67% of older Americans say that belief in God is very important, only 30% of younger Americans say that. And while 54% of those over 55 think having kids is very important for younger Americans, the figure's only 32%. And another recent article from the Washington Post declared that millennials are the reason for the spike in prenups. According to the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, requests for prenups is on the rise, especially from millennials, which is saying something because the overall marriage rate for millennials is significantly on decline. While prenups are quite common today, that's not always been the case. Before the 1970s and the acceptance of no-fault divorce, courts generally understood prenups as undermining the permanence of marriage. Now, according to the HuffPost article, many younger Americans enter marriage assuming it isn't necessarily permanent, and a prenup seems to be just a smart way to be planning ahead. Writing for the New York Times Magazine about breaking up with his girlfriend, millennial David Samuels accurately describes the worldview thread that's running between those two articles. "Our inability to imagine a future together was not ours alone," Samuels said. "It was a symptom of a larger fracture or collapse involving however many hundreds of thousands of people in their 20s and early 30s who seemed to lack any sense of necessary connection to anything larger than their own narrowly personal aims and preoccupations." But here's the thing. Samuels wrote that back in 1999. He was born in 1967. In other words, he's a Gen Xer, my generation. He's not a millennial. And yet he accurately gets at something with which we have to reckon. As one of our editorial team put it the other day, if there's anything wrong with millennials, it's that their parents taught them too well. As Samuel's quote demonstrates, the lack of any sense of necessary connection to anything larger than their own narrowly personal aims and preoccupations didn't originate with millennials. The fruit we're seeing today is the inevitable results of cultural trends embraced in the 1960s and 1970s that caused, in Samuel's words, the basic laws of social gravity to lose their pull. Why would millennials value patriotism when they were taught not to by the culture? Maybe their parents taught them to be patriotic, but what else did? How would they learn to value church when they were largely taught to shop around for the one that they liked, which could most easily fit into their lives without asking too much of them or being too invasive? Why wouldn't they demand prenups if their fundamental vision of marriage never included permanence and they never saw it by example? When the only world that millennials have ever known is one of infinite choice, why wouldn't they expect reality itself to bend to their self-determinations on everything from health benefits to gender identity? Perhaps the principal fault of millennials is that we taught them too well. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
We are coming up on 20 past hour. Nice looking work week coming up. Meteorologist Kevin Williams. All right, Kevin, a nice weather win streak coming up. Thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Great to have you with us today. Here's what's going on this Monday afternoon, the 16th of September. Nearly 50,000 workers are off the job in the biggest strike to hit the auto industry in more than a decade. The United Auto Workers walked off the job at midnight.
We want to be paid fairly. We make quality cars, and we want quality pay.
Union leaders demanding better pay, improved health care, and more job security. Jamie LaRue with the Detroit Free Press.
The longer the strike goes, it does put the ball in GM's court, where they can only afford to have their plants not running for so long. It costs them about $250 million a day just in the U.S. alone to not have their plants running.
3,000 GM workers off the job at plants in Lockport, Tonawanda, and Rochester, New York. Both sides back at it. They are at the negotiating table right now in Detroit. President Trump says the U.S. is locked and loaded, ready to respond after an attack on the world's largest oil processing plant in Saudi Arabia. Many fingers pointed directly at Iran. The drone strikes sent plumes of smoke so high you could see them from space. Correspondent Bill Neely tells us what Mr. Trump is doing now to stabilize world oil markets.
He says he's released oil from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve. That hasn't happened for 8 years.
Energy analysts predict this attack could cause a spike in what you pay for gasoline.
We believe that this strike is significant. We think it will have an impact at the gas pump. It's going to have an impact on prices around the world.
Energy expert Phil Flynn tells Family Life.
The global economy still runs on oil. And if we have 5% of the global supply impacted for an extended period of time, that's going to be felt by everybody.
Right now, the price at the pump about 30 cents lower than it was this time last year. For the second time in 5 months, Israelis are headed to the polls tomorrow in a vote that could determine the political survival of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
An April election left Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu without a viable majority for the first time ever. On Tuesday, Netanyahu, the leader of the Likud party, hopes to maintain his place and continue as Israel's longest-serving prime minister. His primary challenger is Benny Gantz, a former military chief of staff and leader of the Blue and White Party. The race is predicted to be a tight one, as Netanyahu fights for both his political life as well as his reputation. He's been accused of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust, allegations he denies.
Elisa Z reporting the drug company that makes Oxycontin, the painkiller, blamed for starting the opioid epidemic, has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. We're talking about Connecticut-based Purdue Pharma facing 2,600 lawsuits in 26 states. Purdue Pharma will be in bankruptcy court tomorrow. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed an emergency executive order that bans the sale of flavored e-cigarettes.
You know it's being targeted to children. You know they're using flavors called bubble gum and cotton candy and gummy bears and Captain Crunch. That is not for the stated purpose of attracting adults who want to quit smoking.
The ban takes effect in 2 weeks. It comes as the CDC investigates hundreds of mysterious lung injuries linked to vaping. Half a dozen people have died from vaping. A former college classmate of Brett Kavanaugh claims the Supreme Court justice exposed himself to her while the two attended Yale. The details of the complaint appearing in the New York Times over the weekend, but critics say these claims are unsubstantiated.
It's really a shameful attempt to reignite these smears against Judge Kavanaugh that are utterly baseless.
Author Carrie Seferino wrote a book about the bitter Kavanaugh confirmation hearings last year.
This is the most extreme hearsay and gossip that's being peddled around as an attempt to smear Kavanaugh even further.
These new accusations reported in the New York Times despite the fact that the accuser declined to be interviewed by federal authorities and failed to even remember the alleged incident. The frontman for the Cars has died. Rick Ocasek found unresponsive in his Manhattan apartment yesterday. Cause of death not yet known. The Cars were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just last year. A major announcement today by a coalition of religious leaders.
This is the launch of a year of Bible engagement, meaning people interact with the Bible across the globe in all the 7,000 languages, leading to a decade of engagement, which is the bigger project.
Mark Anderson, president of Call to All.
The idea here is that the Bible itself would be available and be understood and engaged around the globe.
Other groups that are organizing this global year of the Bible include the World Evangelical Alliance and Bible societies from a number of countries. It's now 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. And welcome back to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we talk about the weighty issues in the news that impact our public schooling families with the one and only Dr. Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute. Ralph, the kiddos are starting to get into that back-to-school swing of things. Let's talk about enrollment. It's a huge issue in New York. Where have all the kids gone? Public school enrollment at a 30-year low, Ralph. What's going on here?
Well, it's good to be back with you again, Bob. This is a real problem because a major portion of the aid that schools get is related to student attendance. And as you indicated, there's several thousand less students this year than there were in the past years. And it is an all-time low. The whole state is losing population for a variety of reasons. One is the high taxes that we pay here in the state. And also the weather is a factor. Some people are just getting tired of the snow that we have. And again, that significantly hurts public schools.
One of the reasons you have the Teaching and Learning Institute is to get parents involved in public education. This is the time of year, those parent-teacher conferences starting out. A lot of parents simply fail to attend these conferences. Schools are getting a little creative, Ralph, in trying to encourage these encounters between teachers and parents. What are some of the things they're doing now?
It's true that they call them encounters, but that really has a negative connotation.
Yeah, sometimes it does.
In a lot
yeah.
of ways. It should really be a conversation about the education of your children. That's really what the teachers are trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, you know, if you look at the K-6 population, teachers report almost 100% attendance of parents at the teacher-parent conference. But the real problem is that once you get into middle school and into the high school, for whatever reason, parents tend to back away from that. And that's discouraging for teachers because they'd love to be able to talk with the parents about what's happening with their teenagers. It used to be that the teacher-parent conference was at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, and that was it. Well, now you can arrange for varied times if you're working, you know, at night or in the evening, can't go, or you have other things going. Teachers are offering varied times during the day and the evening, maybe even some Saturdays that will work best for accommodating the parents. Some schools are also asking parents that when they get there, if they're there as a group, that they take some of the tests that their students are going to take. And that's always fun. I've been part of that experience.
Yeah.
Some of the schools are encouraging the students to attend with their parents so that they can be part of the conversation.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it when the kids are a part of that. In our district, the kids lead that discussion. And the teachers are kind of on the sidelines and letting the kids take the lead on that. And I really love it when the kids take ownership of their education.
Right.
Over the summer, New York's Education Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia announced her resignation. Of course, this is the person who oversaw the controversial testing, the teacher evaluations, learning standards. Is her resignation a good thing or a setback, Ralph?
Well, certainly there are varied opinions on that, but seeing you ask mine, I'll say that I think it's a real setback for the state. I like the fact that she has been really involved in the outcomes that we're getting from mm-hmm. our students and really holding school districts' feet to the fire on that. And so I think part of it probably was just frustration on her part, which I totally understand.
And last but not least, Ralph, we would be remiss if we did not bring this up because this is a huge issue right now in New York. The childhood vaccination law, it's changed. No longer can you use the religious exemption, only the medical exemption. Do you support this move made in New York?
I do support it. I think particularly one of the issues has to do with students who are not vaccinated taking the buses that belong to the local school districts. Just as a sort of a philosophical thing, I think there are plenty of issues in our country today, this being one of them, where people that hold a minority viewpoint or have a minority belief are exerting their opinions on the majority. And I think it's time that the law is taken as the law and that the majority, their rights be protected as well. So I understand the inconvenience this may be, but I do support withdrawal of the religious exemption at this time.
Well, that's a sticky wicket, and we'll keep our eyes on it. So many issues we talk about today. If you have questions about the Teaching and Learning Institute, what is that exactly? You've got a wonderful website, Ralph, where folks can go. Where is that, sir?
Thank you, Bob. It's simply yrun.org. yrun.org.
All right, keeping our Christians involved in public education, very important, Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute. Issues in Education airs Mondays at the noon hour or online anytime. You can catch it fln.org/news. You can also download all our feature reports. Just go to fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Don't be deceived by the cloudy start to the new work week. Skies will be clearing over the next 12 hours as high pressure builds into the region, setting us up for some fabulous weather from tomorrow right into, if not through, the coming weekend. The call for this afternoon, still a shower or two in some parts of Pennsylvania. Cloud cover will be gradually clearing from the north as the afternoon wears on, but slowly, high temperatures ranging mostly in the lower 70s. That clearing process continues tonight, though fog will form in the valleys, low temps 40s and low 50s. Tomorrow on Wednesday, beautiful with abundant sunshine, high temperatures in the lower 70s, more sunshine and warmer than for Thursday and Friday.
All right, looks like warmth and sunshine for the rest of the week. Thank you, Kevin. Finally, at noon today, a San Diego woman says, dreaming about your fiancé can be dangerous. Reporter Dean Mucci explains.
Jenna Evans wrote about the situation on Facebook, explaining that last week she was dreaming and that she was being chased by some villains and was forced to swallow her engagement ring to protect it. When she woke up from the dream, she realized she had actually gulped down the ring in her sleep.
Took a big drink of water off my nightstand and swallowed it, just like a pill. And in the morning when I woke up and my ring was not on my hand, I was pretty sure I knew what happened.
A gastroenterologist found the ring in her upper intestines and recovered it.
All 2.4 carats, we should mention, intact in Jenna Evans' stomach. That's some weird dream right there. And that's the world we live in, Monday, September 16th. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.